Welcome to Victoria Rumble Room, an island show that likes to duke it out on a weekly basis as we pound away on issues regionally, provincially, nationally, even internationally sometimes. I'm Robin Adair, and speaking of international, that wonderful representative of the Balkans, and also, of course, of Sanic, the Croatian sensation, John Jurisic, is in the building. And Johnny, lots of blows being landed right now, as we're in a BC election year, and boy, some real cracks in the NDP ranks.
No kidding, Robin. Not what I expected, but it's rumbling away, isn't it? BC's advanced education minister, Selena Robinson, has resigned from cabinet and announced she won't be seeking re-election. What did she do to earn her walking papers? Well, here's what she said to a panel of Jewish leaders during an online forum.
And so my perspective is really about education, right? We have a whole generation, and we know from the data that it's 18 to 34-year-olds that have no idea about the Holocaust. They don't even think it happened. They don't even understand that Israel was offered to the Jews who were displaced. So they have no connection to how it started. They don't understand that it was a crappy piece of land with nothing on it. You know, there were, you know, several hundred thousand people, but other than that, it didn't produce an economy. It couldn't grow things. It didn't have anything on it. And that it was the folks who were displaced that came, and the people who had been living there for generations, and together they worked hard, and they had their own battles, right? We know the history. Most of the world does not know that history, and certainly 18 to 34-year-olds have no idea. And when I talk to people in my community, they tell me, especially if they're of a certain age, they say, I remember when Israel formed, and I remember how hard it was for Israel, and I remember the wars over all the years, because they are older. And so they understand a bit more about what Israel's about. 18 to 34 only know Israel as a very powerful country.
Now, for the record, Selena Robinson herself is Jewish, and I don't believe her intent was to be boosting Israel at the expense of the Muslims. She did, however, commit a very poor lack of judgment in the way she phrased things. She was talking about the Levant, one of the areas that is now Israel and Palestine, but it was called the Levant when it was a British protectorate, and She described it as a crappy piece of land with nothing on it, a very poor choice of words. And in a subsequent apology, she said she was referring to the lack of natural resources and farming areas. And she didn't actually attack the Muslims in her address, although she did stand up for Israel's right to exist. In her apology, she promised that she'd be taking Islamophobia courses. But apparently this apology was not enough, especially for the harder left, who strongly support not only the pro-Palestinian movement, but the Hamas movement, and also strongly condemn Israel. In the end, this led to her being sacked in cabinet.
Selena will be stepping down in her role as advanced education minister. She will remain in our caucus. The reason for this decision is that over the past few days, both Minister Robinson and myself have been reaching out to the many communities that have been harmed by her remarks made on a panel that she participated in, to understand how to make things better.
So the NDP pounced and punted our advanced education minister. Why? Well, for one thing, there was a well-organized mini-revolt within the party. A very professional and well-crafted petition was thrown together in a couple of days, saying Robinson was justifying genocide. This petition rapidly achieved 10,000 signatures. From my perspective, this was not a content and or fact-based misjudgment. Selena expressed an opinion that in almost every circumstance, but a political one, would and should have been interpreted as her rightful personal opinion, and most importantly, her right to express that opinion. But we live in and operate in a very cruel, dangerous, and manipulative communication influence world in 2024. The power and organizational reach of social media enables a very small minority of people to influence, coerce, and bully anybody and any organization. If you're not prepared and aware of the consequences of such power, then you'll end up making wrong and fundamentally flawed leadership decisions based on flawed criteria and information. This was a highly organized effort, and the pro-Palestinian activist movement clearly was involved. And you better believe some of them were involved in vandalizing the outside of her office and were likely very pleased with their efforts.
Hello, everyone. Me and my comrades came here, and we've done a little bit of decorating here at Selena Robinson's office. What do you think? Do you think we got our point across? Let me know. We certainly let her know what we think, and we want her out of the NDP caucus. We refuse to have an MLA that's a racist.
Now, some of these same faces have marched at the BC legislature and rallied in front of the art gallery in downtown Vancouver, making their feelings felt, and they were also present outside an NDP caucus retreat that took place before the firing of Selena Robinson, and we saw this video. We were quite surprised at the anger and vehemence and actually the harsh language that was being used, and the activist that was really the most vocal in this particular incident was Itarsha Walia. She was leading the way in the protest.
Shameful! Racist! Racist! You can't apologize your way out of racism!
You have to go on
the other side. Are you a BC NDP handler?
There. As security asks, you need to go that way.
Shame on the BC NDP! Shame on you!
You have to go.
Defending genocide, endorsing genocide, standing behind a minister of higher fucking education who doesn't even understand how colonialism operates. Shameful! Racist!
It's very clear the New Democrats did not want to prolong this. They wanted to stop the bleeding. They're in an election year. They've got to get back on track. And let's face it, the majority of BC pro-Palestinian movement people also tend to vote NDP. And they're radical, they're on the radical side of the party, but that's who they vote for, and they don't want to lose that support. And you know that most NDPers are pretty mainstream for the most part. Sure, they support Palestine, as I think most Canadians do. They'd love to see Palestine become an independent, free country. They'd love to see the war stop. Nobody wants to see this carnage. It's terrible. On the other hand, it's the radicals who yell out things like "From the River to the Sea," which talks about the destruction and removal of Israel. And so they take it up about 10 notches further. So there is that radical fringe that the NDP is having to sort of try to keep under the tent. And they kept them under the tent by getting Robinson removed. So while that was going on, what about the virtual silence amongst NDPers when Hamas actually invaded Israel on October the 7th? And at that time, 1,200 people were killed. There were elderly people killed. There were children. There were women who were tortured and raped. And there was very little sound coming out of the NDP when this was going on. However, Israel retaliated. Who was surprised? But Israel retaliated. And then immediately there were screams of genocide from well-organized weekly rallies.
It's very disturbing, Robin, that we're seeing these tactics. I am upset about this. Manipulative techniques to influence opinion. This is happening in the States. It is now happening up here. Someone who's been blowing the whistle on this type of campaigning is Colwood Councillor Ian Ward. He and videographer Charles Bodie reported that funds were going out to finance rallies and some protesters being paid for their time. Regarding the Selena Robinson affair, Councillor Ward had this to say: "A win for the pro-terrorist mob. I've never been more disappointed in the BC NDP. Somewhere, Victoria Councillor Susan Kim is celebrating like she did on October 7th. Disgusting.
Well, you can certainly see Ian Ward is not afraid to express an opinion, and he doesn't mind jumping into polarizing issues. Of course, some of these issues are taking place around the world. He also deals very much with issues in Colwood, Western communities, and our wider region. Lots to say. Let's zoom him in. And now joining us for the very first time in the Victoria Rumble Room is Councillor Ian Ward from Colwood. Nice to have you on the show.
Thank you, Robin. Yeah, appreciate it. And glad to be here with you and John.
Well, we've got lots of questions for you. You're a civic official who apparently is not afraid to express your thoughts, which is great. And sometimes it's a little refreshing to hear that. A case in point is actually something that's become a national story. It broke out when yourself and Charles Bodie were talking about the pro-Palestinian movement and the core group that's within that movement. Not everybody who's involved in it, but a core group there that are highly organized and financed, where they actually pay people. And this made national news. Now, how do your fellow councillors, particularly in Colwood, view your involvement in all this?
Well, a little trepidation, I think, Robin. I think, you know, and to their credit, you know, this particular Colwood Council and, you know, led by our mayor, who I respect a great deal, Doug Kobayashi, our focus really has been on delivering results for the community, you know, really staying focused on the local events that matter. But, you know, I'm an individual with a Jewish family by marriage and Jewish friends, very close friends. So, you know, when this all erupted on October 7th, obviously it kind of hit close to home and it was very personal for me. So, you know, as you said, I speak my mind and, you know, and I elected to weigh in early, particularly on the Susan Kim sort of fiasco, as I call it. I think my colleagues in council, you know, are certainly give me the latitude to you know, they step back and stay out of it. And you know, that's him. He speaks his mind. That's who he is. They tend to lay a little lower than that. And, you know, I respect that. And certainly don't look to embroil them in any sort of controversy. But I am who I am. And, you know, I'm willing to apologize when and where I've made a mistake, which I think is somewhat unique as well in the political realm. But I also feel that you know, we owe it to taxpayers, to residents, to ordinary citizens to be a little bit more upfront and open and transparent. I find transparency is something that seems to be rapidly eroding in the political realm. And, you know, I'd like to restore a little bit of that. And you know, it may rub some people the wrong way from time to time. And that's an unfortunate byproduct, but I'm going to continue to kind of, you know, be out there and do what I can and put my community first.
But let's move on now to something more local, Ian. I know that you're a Colwood councillor and we've got Colwood questions. Your area is just exploding with development. And of course, this has created some real uproar where we've had municipal elections where whole councils in Langford got removed and other people got removed in other municipalities, including the mayor of Colwood. So there's concerns about development going too rapidly, but it's happening anyway. And Royal Bay is one of those real epicenters in your municipality where there's so many new homes. And now people want services, including they want a medical clinic. And a medical clinic is great if you've got doctors in it, but apparently that's a challenge. So now there's talk of council exploring a new clinic with private sector partners. And I gather the BC government isn't totally against this idea. You're a business guy. What do you make of it? Do you think this could float in Colwood?
Robin, I do. I do believe it can work. It's a very innovative approach to, you know, to an issue that, you know, naysayers would say is a provincial issue. And I don't disagree. It really is. And there is an element of sort of downloading to the municipal level. But, you know, I liken it to, you know, if your neighbor's shed is on fire, you've got a garden hose. Do you wait for the fire department because it's their responsibility, or you step in and, you know, and do your bit? So, you know, our mayor has been a strong proponent of this from the outset. And I think there is an opportunity to leverage the system the way it's set up now without moving to a private model. You know, fearmongers would say, oh, this is a first step towards, you know, privatization of healthcare. And it, absolutely not. I mean, what we're looking at is a scenario whereby, you know, we take the business administration and the startup and all of those challenges that go with operating a brick and mortar facility away from the physicians. You know, they didn't, majority of them didn't go into their field to be, you know, real estate managers and, you know, business managers and HR people. You know, they did it to help people. So there's an altruistic kind of bent there. So our model would see us as the city provide a more attractive, you know, business model for these doctors to come in. So we take away some of these headaches for them. Certainly the mayor has spoken with a large number of physicians, all of whom have expressed significant interest in this model. It's kind of the old Kevin Costner line from the Field of Dreams movie, if you build it, we will come. So, you know, we have a strong belief that unlike traditional kind of walk-in clinics or other facilities that are out there, you know, this model has some real attractants to family physicians to bring them to Colwood.
So let's keep on this theme of West Shore, obviously, as a guy interviewing a counselor from that area prior to the last election. It was a rocking, you know, the whole region was in fifth gear, developing, building a community for families that couldn't live anywhere else in the region, trying to make it less expensive. Clearly, the election slowed things down, especially in Langford. And so much of the current development or building construction that's going now was from still that previous council. So it seems now the provincial government is saying, build more. We need more. And council's saying, I don't think so. So here we have colliding interests. Where do you stand on this? How do you see this evolving in the West Shore?
Well, it's a delicate balance, John. I think, you know, you've got a lot of individuals, you know, even our own prosperity survey in Colwood done through Angus Reid shows that, you know, housing is a real issue for people, right? I mean, I've got a teenage son who, you know, would want to stay in the community. And as it stands right now, that housing doesn't exist. So, you know, we need to build housing. We know we need to build housing. Now, you know, certainly in Colwood, I think we have a bit of an advantage in that, you know, we're building on brown space, right? As Robin alluded to, we've got, you know, the Royal Bay and Beachlands development here, significant size development that is building on an old gravel pit. So, you know, you're not dealing with the political fallout of, you know, defoliating an area. You're not taking down forests. You're not dealing with any of that. You're not, you know, really impacting what I call sort of legacy neighborhoods of single family homes. So, you know, we can do a lot of density there. And I think, you know, we've got an OCP that I agreed to use as sort of my North Star. And, you know, it calls for higher density building and transit corridors and areas where it belongs. But at the same time, you know, I also believe that we do need to protect the integrity of some of our neighborhoods, of single family homeowners and park space and quality of life. I mean, there's a reason people move to our community, to our South Island, to the West Shore, you know, and it wasn't just affordability. It's about lifestyle. And I think we do have to guard against just kind of a wholesale, you know, build anywhere and as much as you can. But I think, you know, fortunately in Colwood, we've got the space to, I think, keep the folks a level above us pretty happy. And, you know, at the same time, not, you know, really disrupt the essence of what this community is.
On the other hand, not to play devil's advocate exactly, but to have all this development, you have to have the services. And you talked about doctors and medicine, and that's a problem for the whole region, but also the infrastructure that's needed for all this new housing, all the sewage lines, all the water that is needed for these new homes, the transportation routes, getting people to and from work. It's going to become more and more complicated as more and more people say, hey, I want to live on the West Shore. How are you feeling about the planning and the execution of getting all of this infrastructure in place?
Well, I think there's been some first steps that will help, but they're not enough. I mean, we see some ability for communities to, you know, look at additional DCC components that, you know, for those not familiar, development cost charges from development, which would allow us to address some of these infrastructure needs. But, you know, it's a drop in the bucket, Robin. I mean, I really think at the end of the day, you know, successive provincial governments and the feds even have pushed things down so far. You know, the amount of downloading to municipalities is a real challenge. And, you know, with the housing crisis and where we sit right now, infrastructure is going to be the key to it all. Like, sewer lines in Colwood are aging. Pipe diameters were built much smaller for smaller residential neighborhoods, solely of single family homes. And it's going to become an issue. I think sewage capacity is going to become an issue. It's not a sexy topic, let's be honest. But at the end of the day, it's great you raise it, because these are realities. And if we want to improve transit, if we want to be able to move people in and out of a region, you know, we need money for roads. We need money for, for the transit facilities. We need money for all of these things. And taxation isn't going to cut it. We can't see double digit tax increases at the municipal level on our residents time and again. I think we need the folks at the higher level to come up with a next step to follow on some of their plans. If they want to see municipalities deliver on these pretty ambitious growth plans, then, show us the money. I mean, we really will need assistance on this.
We'll have more on this issue on future Rumble Rooms, but now for just a moment, a quick thought about King Charles III. And, King Charles is, he's our new monarch. I'm still getting used to saying King Charles. He's been Prince Charles forever. And, a lot of people in this country, they aren't big fans of the constitutional monarchy. We've always had it, but there's a lot of lukewarm feelings about it and the future of the royal family in Canada and all of that. But you say all of that and people still have to be feeling badly that King Charles has been diagnosed with cancer. They've caught it early, and we're all hoping for a very quick recovery. Of course, there's a real downside when you have a mother like Queen Elizabeth, who lived well into her 90s, and Charles has waited his entire life to finally become the king. And now, less than a year after being crowned, he's faced with this crisis, this health crisis. So Godspeed, King Charles. And on that note, John, time to wrap up another Rumble Room.
Unbelievable. Hey, Robin, we do have long-standing traditions in this country. Times are changing. I personally harbor resentment towards King Charles because of Princess Diana. I love the traditions, but my personal opinion sways that way. However, the royal family remains a fascination for millions, and I wish the king a speedy recovery. I feel sad about this. Nonetheless, we also wish to thank our bazillion, we're at a bazillion viewers now, Robin. the Rumble Room has stormed out of the gates since Christmas with our highest viewer numbers yet. I think we were somewhere around 75,000 cumulative views to start off the year.
In one month. We hit the Rumble. In one month.
Come on. Yeah. Thank you to all of you. We'll keep rumbling. We certainly will keep rumbling. We guarantee you that, and hope you keep watching. To regularly see our shows, please register on Facebook, on X, brackets Twitter, YouTube. Follow us on Podbean, that's podcasting, as well as Instagram, as well as TikTok. That's it for my sales pitch to keep listening to us. If you like rumbling, join us next week. I remain your Croatian sensation, Johnny Juricic.
And I'm Robin Adair, and I'm so proud to live in the greatest country in the world, in my opinion. And, we're not a so-called country. We're a great country that people want to come and live in from around the world. And we're welcoming people to come here, live here, and share in this bountiful future. And while they're here, they can watch this show and they can rumble on.